St. Paul spoke of Gentiles, people who were not part of God's covenant people. Today we hear a story about a very particular group of Gentiles who hear the good news and come to see what God has done. St. Matthew writes, in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. This too is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, I hate to say it, but it appears there has been a mistake in the Christmas story. Now, some of our more theologically liberal friends would say, well, of course there's a mistake in the Christmas story because all of this is just historically implausible and scientifically unverifiable. You don't find any of this in the extra-biblical literature. It's all a mistake, but that's not what I have in mind at all. You see, for all of its joy and wonder, the Christmas story also includes a cautionary tale about a diplomatic blunder. Or so says Richard Gowan, writing in World Politics Review last week. Now, if you're like me, you're not accustomed to thinking of the wise men as making a mistake. I mean, after all, we call them wise men for a reason. And it's not because they bothered to stop to ask for directions, though that would make them wise men indeed. No, the reason we call them wise men is because, frankly, there aren't any more attractive options. If we wanted to be literal, or at least close to it, we would call this group of people magi, because that's close to what the original version of the story calls them. But we don't call them magi because, first, no one is sure how to pronounce it. Is it magi, magi? Nobody is really sure, so we don't bother. And second, we don't call them that because of its association with magic, as in the magi were magicians and frauds who practiced the dark arts of divination and sorcery, which were all definite no-nos in the world of Judaism. Hardly better is the scholarly suggestion that these men were astrologers who read the heavens and advised rulers on their plans. I mean, no self-respecting Christian wants to think of Nostradamus or Gene Dixon as pointing us to Jesus with any reliability. Recall what we said about Nancy Reagan when she consulted an astrologer just to plan the state dinners. And neither should we call them kings. Of course, it makes the Christmas carols harder to sing, but St. Matthew never calls these men kings. That idea comes from the prophet Isaiah, who said that kings shall come to the brightness of your dawn, and from Psalm 72, which pictures exotic Eastern king bringing gifts to an even greater king. So what do we do with them? Who are these people? Well, it's now fairly widely agreed among scholars that the Magi were members of a priestly caste or class of priests serving the rulers of Persia. And as such, they had access to power, and they themselves wielded the power that is appropriate to court retainers. The only problem with this is the Magi didn't go to church, by which I really mean they didn't go to the synagogue because they did not believe in the God of Israel. Now, it is these wise men, these members of this priestly caste, these courtiers, who had come to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we have observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." Now, according to Richard Gowan, who's a researcher and senior policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations, this opening question contains two major mistakes. First, the Magi give away their one big piece of intelligence, the existence of the Messiah, immediately, which reduces their leverage. And they compound this gaffe by simultaneously revealing the main gap in their intelligence, namely the exact whereabouts of this Messiah. This mistake allows Herod to seize the agenda, persuading the wise men to do his looking for him. So as international missions go, Gowan says, this was not exactly a triumph. It was, in fact, a mistake. Now, Gowan freely admits that his is a mischievous misreading of an ancient story. But what if his thesis is in the main correct? Namely, that these Magi were, in fact, on a diplomatic mission. Chances are that we haven't thought about the Magi being on a diplomatic mission because, well, this is the Christmas story. Or to be more technically correct, it is the Epiphany story, and we know what Christmas is all about. Secondly, we probably haven't thought about the Magi as being on a diplomatic mission because that would make this story political in nature, and we Americans work very hard to maintain that separation between religion and politics, between church and state. We think the one ought to have nothing to do with the other. But much to our surprise, the Bible knows no such distinction. This story is, in fact, thoroughly political. That much is clear from the very start, which notes that this is the time of King Herod. The world hasn't started telling time by the date of Jesus' birth just yet, because that, after all, has just happened maybe a couple of years ago, and if not a couple of years, certainly within months or even weeks. No, this is Herod's time, and it is Herod's world. As king, Herod runs things, even if only on behalf of his patron, the Emperor of Rome, who ran an even larger and more powerful empire. Judea, the region where Bethlehem is situated, was but a small, insignificant outpost in that great, vast empire, and Caesar, frankly, didn't need to waste his time tending to the affairs of state out on that frontier. Caesar was content to leave the daily grind of administration, the police work, and the garbage collection to local leaders and client kings like Herod, who was grateful for the privilege and guarded it jealously. But you begin to see just how political is the world into which Jesus is born. It is a world of kings and administrative districts and all the squabbles that arise over who gets to control which piece of territory. And frankly, the smaller the patch of responsibility, the more murderously it is guarded by the kings who control it. It just so happens that the rising of a star told wise men in the east who watched the skies for such things that a new king had been born, and not just any king, but specifically a king of the Jews, which Herod thought that he was. So the wise men had set off for Jerusalem because that was Israel's political capital. That was the seat of power, and they set off on an official diplomatic mission. They had come to pay homage to this new king, that is, to submit themselves to his authority, which they symbolized by bowing down before him. They had also observed diplomatic customs by bringing with them gifts appropriate for a king, gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Their only problem was they weren't sure where exactly they would find this king. And why should they know? After all, they were from the east, probably from Persia or Samaria or maybe even Saudi Arabia. Wherever they were from, the Magi were not from Jerusalem. They weren't even from Judea. They weren't from anywhere in Israel itself. They were foreigners. They were outsiders. They were non-Jews. For all of their power and prestige, for all of their education and erudition, these wise men were, from the perspective of Jesus' own people, aliens rather than citizens of the Commonwealth of Israel, and they were strangers to the covenants of God's promise. For all intents and purposes, the wise men, like all other Gentiles or non-believers, lived in this world without God and without hope. Only when they saw the star at its rising, something within them stirred. Something spoke of wonder and of light. Something spoke of the dawning of a new day. Something spoke of the start of a new order of the ages. Something called them to leave their contemplations and their contraptions, their charts and their chants. Something within them beckoned them to travel west in search of the child who had born King of the Jews. Perhaps we today like to think that we are like the wise men setting out in search of Jesus. Wise men still seek him, proclaim both Christmas card and bumper sticker. When we find Jesus, we like to think that we are going to offer him our consular services and help Jesus find his place in this world. How else could a first century Jew from Palestine negotiate Starbucks and Twitter and the dating scene with all its modern complications, to say nothing of getting a job and paying a mortgage? Surely Jesus needs our help to communicate his message in the modern era, in the telecommunications age. But that, I think, is to get the story mixed up and to turn it round. Because the Epiphany story is about a diplomatic mission, all right. But it's not so much about our journey, or even the wise men's journey to Jesus. It is about Jesus' journey to us. God's coming to us, and indeed to all people. Not just to insiders, not just to the people who belong, not even just to God's chosen people, those in the know. Epiphany tells us that God in Christ Jesus comes to all people, to the outsiders, to the foreigners, to the aliens, to those to whom love is a stranger. What the wise men found when they saw the child is that the God of Israel has turned in generosity the face of mercy toward all the nations. The God of Israel is not the God of Israel alone, but of the whole world. The God of Israel is not simply the God of a select few, but of all the people. The God of Israel is not the God only to believers, but to everyone. And finding a gracious welcome in the presence of this king, the wise men knelt down and worshiped him. We would be wise to do the same. Amen.